When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Football Social Daily. Premier League updates.
Hello, happy Monday. This is Football Social Daily, the only daily Premier League podcast. I'm Jim Salverson, that's Niall McCorn.
Hello.
That's Steve McNaughton.
Hello.
And today is Blue Monday in the UK, scientifically the most depressing day of the year, but it doesn't feel very much like a Blue Monday. If anything, it's a Red Monday, Steve, as Liverpool take a step closer to winning their first league title in 30 years. Can we now concede that it is a done deal? We'll get onto that very, very shortly. We're also going to be taking a look back over the weekend's action and deciding who is our Kate Middleton and who is our Meghan Markle. In other words, we'll be picking our heroes and our villains from the weekend's
Choppy
Premier League
waters
action.
Here, Jim. Choppy waters.
And we're going to be talking about transfer gossip. Get it whilst it's hot. We're going to be walking the lads through the back pages of the papers for the latest news and views and rumours that are doing the rounds, including the latest on the Bruno Fernandes deal, and new striker for Spurs, and Arsenal actually signing a player that potentially they might need. Maybe. We'll talk about that soon as well. But let's talk first about Liverpool and the end of a very, 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 very long wait for a league title, Steve. 2-0 win over Manchester United on Sunday. It means that Jurgen Klopp's men are now 16 points clear at the top of the table. Certainly the Anfield crowd at the final whistle seem to believe that it's a done deal. Come on, Steve. It's time to admit it. It's done.
It's not over yet.
It's dusted.
It's not over yet. I think, you know, yesterday, great atmosphere in the ground. You know, it very much like a Champions League to begin with. You know, United getting a lot of hassle off the Liverpool fans when they were on the ball, and I think that rattled them a little bit. But I think, you know, you win your game in hand, you know, to take it to 19 points, and you're thinking, actually, it might be on. But I'd like to see
19 points in it might
be
a
remarkable capitulation if you don't win it.
I just think that, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, you know, on the WhatsApp like I do most days, and I said the holy grail is 17 or 18 points the gap, you know, for Liverpool. And, you know, as we head towards, you know, potentially being 19 clear, you start to kind of think, hold on a minute, you know, it might be something special. But I think it'd be folly of us to kind of just on the 20th of January say, well, it's done and dusted.
It's ridiculous. I don't believe there is a single Liverpool fan that... I don't believe you're telling me the truth. I don't believe there is a single Liverpool fan that genuinely believes it's still an open competition. I don't believe Jurgen Klopp, for whatever he says in press conference, believes it's still a competition. It's just what you have to say at this stage. Right,
no,
now?
No, I just think there's a danger of being complacent. It's a really tough league. You know, whichever team you play in the Premier League, you know, they get chances. I mean, even that Man United team had a couple of chances yesterday. You know, and anything can happen in a football match. And I think, you know, even though we've been, you know, it's fair to say, you know, we've had not a great run with injuries last few months with the build-up of games and stuff like that. You know, if Alisson goes out again, or if Van Dijk gets injured, or... you know, Sadio Mane gets injured. You know, the possibility of losing a few games is...
Are Spurs going to finish second in the Premier League?
No.
They're 17 points off second.
Are they?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're a bit as well.
This is true. This is mind games, isn't it? No, you've got to be with me on this one. This is a done
Jurgen
deal for
Klopp knows what he's doing. And I think it would be, like Steve says, folly to come out and say that, yeah, we've sewn it up, we've done it. I think that's the sort of thing maybe...
Kevin Keegan would do.
Yeah. A manager from years gone by might have done that. I don't think Jurgen Klopp is cut from that sort of cloth, to be perfectly honest with you. And he says, you know, the only moment you can really taste it is when the final whistle goes on that final game and you've got your hands on the trophy. And, you know, that's as cliche bell as you can get from Jurgen Klopp, to be honest. They've got a great chance of doing it. 16 points clear. Manchester City drew at the weekend against Crystal Palace, which is obviously going to help Liverpool out. Leicester dropped points as well. So, you know, Liverpool, they've got it all in their hands and they have only got themselves to blame if it doesn't go their way this season. They've put the hard yards in. I predicted at the start of the season, thankfully I didn't put it on social media like a lot of the guys on the sports social did, thankfully. I predicted Liverpool to finish third this season.
Yeah? I thought the drama of last season...
I thought that it was just going to take the steam out of them. Champions League, being so close in the league, I thought the drama and the energy expended in last season was going to be too much for them.
Yeah,
how wrong was I? So, I mean, I'm happily being proved wrong by a Liverpool team who have really had 3 years in the development. So let's not forget that. I think there may be a little bit of a placebo effect here because Liverpool have beaten their old rivals, Manchester United. Some supporters are getting carried away. Manchester United aren't the force they used to be. I think we all knew that.
Yeah. Dreadful.
If it was, if they had beaten Manchester City 2-0 in that vein, I think everyone can be going, right, it's ours now. But let's not temper it with the fact. I know it's a derby game and Manchester United never lie down in these sorts of games. But you have just beaten a team who are going to struggle to get into the Champions League spots this season.
I think we're seeing the flip side of that as well with the reaction from United fans. The fact they've lost to Liverpool has amplified this result at the weekend into a lot of negativity towards the club and Solskjaer, which I'm sure we'll get on to very soon. But, right, question before we move on to the heroes and villains. There's two potential fantastic scenarios for when, or if your case, if Liverpool do win the
You won't
title.
Get it out of me.
You could win it at Goodison. You could win it at the Etihad Stadium. So for it to happen at Goodison, essentially Liverpool and City need to currently keep on winning at the rate they're winning. So Liverpool need to win at 2.9 points a game, which obviously is impossible, but you know what I mean? And City need to win at 2.08 points per game. If that continues, it means you win the title on the 14th of March at Goodison Park. If City don't slip up and Liverpool keep on winning and being as ruthless as they are, you'll win it on the 4th of April at the Etihad Stadium. Is there a preference there? Instantly, either of those dates is the earliest the Premier League title has ever been won.
Well, do you want to know something weird? And I was thinking about this yesterday. So that's 52 games at Anfield unbeaten for Liverpool, which is a remarkable record. It's the third longest record of being undefeated at home in Premier League history. So they're doing an unbelievable job. I think Arsenal and Chelsea are the other two teams in that. I'm not 100%. But what's remarkable is I don't think, personally, this Liverpool team is as good to watch, in my opinion, it's just my opinion, than the Manchester City team that got 100 points a couple of seasons ago. Just personally, I don't think it is. That's just a personal preference. I thought Liverpool were better to watch last season. I think this season there's been moments where you think, have they really got it about them? They're just a winning machine.
They've been incredibly professional this
season. But this is the remarkable thing. Liverpool could get 107 points this season, or 106 points, or something like that. In a side that we're saying... okay, they're not as good as they were the season before. Well, they are as good, but they don't look as good. So that's an incredible thing to be able to say, that Liverpool could possibly eclipse Manchester City's record of centurions by two wins. That's an unbelievable
106,
statistic.
107 points will never be beaten.
No,
never.
It's madness. Yeah. But that's obviously if they win all the rest of their games, which is highly unlikely, but it's always a possibility.
So go on, Etihad or Goodison, Steve. Which one are you picking? Obviously, there's a lot of other places it can happen as well.
It's a tough one because, first and foremost, like you say, we've got to do it first. It must be annoying for the podcast listeners to hear me keep saying this on it, but I do apologise, but I'm just being
just
a bit
the
pragmatic.
Podcast,
the host as well. But I think it's a funny one because, you know, Everton were last season when we drawn at Everton, you know, we had a guy on from the podcast, one of the podcast saying, you know, we stopped Liverpool winning the league, which was a ridiculous shout. But it'd be nice to kind of do it in front of Everton's fans, but the reality is Everton aren't that significant to us anymore. I mean, the local derby, you know, it's a bit feisty and it can be a bit tasty and stuff like that, but Everton, you know, are they really of a massive concern to Liverpool anymore? I don't think they are, in all honesty. That could change in a few years. New stadium, Ancelotti bedding in, and you know, another few hundred million quid spent. And I think it'd be nice to do it at Man City and take their crown off them at the you know, their ground. But obviously, that means we've got to win at the Etihad.
Yes,
to do it. And you know, I think your motivation, if you're the Man City player and Pep in that dressing room before the, you know, kickoff, is saying you cannot let it happen in front of our fans,
yeah,
because that'd be, you know, the ultimate insult, really, you know, to go and do it. And I think even though we probably have 2,000 people in the Etihad in that kind of, you know, bottom corner, you know, there'd be a party there, you know, and the atmosphere and the vibe would be amazing. But I think I'd like to, if we are going to do it, and obviously what, we're 3 months away, 2.5 months away from that point, it'd be nice to do it at the Etihad if we are going to win it.
You haven't lost a game yet. Are you asked about Invincibles or not?
I don't give a about that, to be fair.
you know, go. I think as long as you win it.
You know, you talk about this Arsenal Invincibles and the fact that I've just got someone in the studio next door flashing obscenities at me. You know, but I think I'm not bothered about that, because the way I see it with the Invincibles, you know, the amount of games they're drawn on the, you know, route to that 49 game stretch.
Yeah. Twice against Portsmouth.
Yeah, exactly. They're the most important results out of that.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
So,
and you know, as evidence to where it would be nice for the title to be won, the person who was flashing obscenities on his phone, he had a swear word written on his phone, who happens to be a Manchester City fan.
Yeah.
So it shows what that would mean.
Do you know what's quite interesting? And I'm going to have a go with him now, because you know when Man City have won the last couple of titles and stuff like that, generally a position from the Liverpool fan base is like, great team. Pip does better than us, you know, over the course of the season, deserve to win the title. Now, if Liverpool...
I'm not sure about that, Steve.
Yeah, well, from the people that I've seen,
okay,
anyway.
Right.
And so, you know, obviously I can't speak for globally. Yeah. But from the Man City fans that I know, it's like, oh, hashtag tainted title, Liverpool, you know, and all that. And it just lacks a bit of class, I think, if I'm honest.
All right, well, let's move on to heroes and villains from the weekend. I'll tell you what, do you want to do heroes first or villains first?
Well, I've got a list of about six of each.
Good, because so I've not even thought of any.
I'm ready to rattle through as
all
many.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, we'll do heroes, then we'll take a little break and we'll come back and do villains, all right? So have you got a load? No, you can start with your heroes.
Well, I've got some honourable mentions, and then there is one true hero at the end. Jack Grealish. For pretty much single-handedly dragging Aston Villa through this season. He's having an amazing season.
Did you see that stat yesterday?
I haven't seen it, no.
41% of Aston Villa's goals this
come
season
through Grealish.
Have come through. You know, he's been an integral part
That's
of that
insane.
Happening. Which is insane.
Yeah, brilliant. So, fair play to Jack Grealish.
Yep.
Could easily have been my hero this week, but it wasn't to be. Jose Mourinho for being the petty man that we all know he is by saying Pep Guardiola obviously doesn't enjoy football because he's lost all of his hair. He's bald, which means obviously his football isn't enjoyable, whereas I've got a full thatch of grey hair, so therefore my football style is more important.
Yeah, but Jose, you've got like a, you know, ton gravel delivery bags under your eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
You only have to look at me and Steve. We're similar ages, and Steve clearly enjoys his football as a Liverpool fan more than I do as a West Ham fan. I've got a full head of hair. Steve's got nothing on top, so that clearly doesn't work from Jose Mourinho's
well,
point of view.
I'm just trying to decide whether that's an insult or what.
It's a fact.
Look at this idiot next door in the studio next door trying to, you know, hijack the podcast.
The Manchester City fan is now holding up a phone with champions is written on it.
Champions for the time being, asterisk on the end of there. Good pettiness from Jose, always like to see that.
Yep.
You talk about 41% of Villa's goals coming through Grealish. What about Adama Traore, who's added an end product to his game at Wolverhampton Wanderers, coming back from 2-0 down against Southampton to win the game 3-2, two assists from Adama, who's just an absolute monster of a man.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to be going into a 50-50 with him. You don't know if you're going to come out the other side.
There were rumours about him being linked with West Ham a couple of seasons ago when he was still at Middlesbrough, and he was deemed not to have an end product, and we didn't sign him, and he's one of the signings. I look at all the players across the league now, and he is one of the most exciting players.
He'll be gone in summer, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, he was their record signing and he's finally starting to come good for Wolves. But Raul Jimenez, for me, is the real hero of Wolves. 27 goal involvements in all competitions this season. That breaks down as 18 goals and 9 assists, which is more than any other person since the start of last season's Premier League.
Wow.
So it's absolutely brilliant statistics from him. But here's my hero for this week, Erling Haaland at Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah.
Showing Premier League clubs what they've missed out on. He comes on as a substitute for Dortmund. They're 2 goals behind in their Bundesliga match against Augsburg. In 23 minutes, he scored a hat-trick on his debut, an absolute tornado of a hat-trick as well, just charging at the defence. By all means, there was a lot of space in behind Augsburg's back line, but he exploited it and took his chances, and they ended up going on to win the game by 5-3.
Incredible.
He's 19 years old. Mm. 19. I think we're all forgetting just how good he could possibly be, and I hope we do see him in the Premier League in future. So maybe the one that got away, but I know it's not Premier League focused directly, but certainly Haaland, for me, showed exactly what he could be in the future.
There's a lot of talk about Haaland needing development as well and him not being the complete player yet. I mean, he's proving just on a regular basis that he is.
So often we see young players make the wrong moves in their career. I mean, you could argue we've seen it with Wilfred Zaha, who went to Manchester United maybe a bit early.
Yeah.
It's too early to write Moise Keane off, but maybe going to Everton, was that the correct move for him? I think getting out of Italy probably was, but to Everton, was that right for him? We've seen players move early doors and it's not really worked out for them. This lad, I think Dortmund is the absolute perfect fit for him. Just the way that they play football, they've got a focal point up front in a number nine. They've got dynamic players out wide. Jadon Sancho, I mean, imagine Sancho providing assists and Brandt on the other side providing assists for Haaland. It's just a scary thought, to be honest.
They always do it, Dortmund, as well, don't they? They always kind of find these young players and you know, they get a team going where they're playing attractive football and they're doing well in domestically and in Europe. And I think I seen him come on and I thought, wow, he was like a bulldozer at the weekend. And there's a lot of teams that just cannot cope with his physicality. Yeah. And I think when you've got the likes of, you've just mentioned Sancho and Julian Brandt, you know, I mean, you've got to add Marco Reus into the mix as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's just superb. And I think even though the financials of that deal were obviously quite murky and did put off Man United in particular, I mean, why would you go into Man United in the current state that it's in? Because he would have been one of the fall guys that's ultimately going to have the finger pointed at him. And I think, you know, fair play to the lad, fair play to him, really happy for him.
The only potential negative I think he might face in the future is because of his build. And when you get these great big young players, they do tend to suffer with injuries develop when they play too much football.
As long as he still looks like a big baby, it doesn't really matter. No one's going to question his age.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Dortmund-Augsburg sounds like a great game as well. I went to that game a couple of seasons ago and it was 4-3.
Really?
So the fact that there's a 5-3 this season, if you're going to go to a Bundesliga game, that is clearly the game to go to because it is obviously a goal fest every time.
I mean, well, Dortmund haven't been as good as they want to be in the Bundesliga this season so far, so maybe Haaland is the tonic they need to try and get themselves back up to the top end of the league.
Incredible.
If you are going to go and sample a European football game, though, going to visit Borussia Dortmund is highly recommended.
I thought you were
going
to say go
things
to Anfield then. I was like, steady on, Steve.
It's one of the best places I've ever watched a football match.
Agreed.
German football, I'm a big fan of.
No queues for the beer either, which is even better. Mm. All right, my hero from the weekend, before we take a break, then we'll do villains afterwards, is, could have easily been a villain, I guess, but it was one of my favourite moments from the weekend's football. It was Steve Cook for his handball against Norwich, because I think I just love moments in football like that. Now, Cook's apologised to everyone in the Bournemouth dressing room since, because it was on the 24th minute or something like that.
It was in the 33rd minute. It was nil-nil. What are you doing, Steve Cook?
Pulled off a save that any goalkeeper would be absolutely thrilled to have made. To do it before VAR is a stupid decision. To do it once VAR has been introduced, it is a ridiculous decision. But the referee didn't need to refer to VAR at all because it was such a blatant handball that he got sent straight off. But I enjoyed it as a footballing moment. And you know what? There's a little part of me. It was stupid, yeah. And without him trying to save the ball with his hand, it would have been a goal. It was a penalty, so it was pretty much a goal anyway. Then Bournemouth had to play the rest of the game with 10 men. But kind of the flip side of that is,
so you've gained absolutely nothing.
If Bournemouth are going to stay in the Premier League,
which they're not.
They need that kind of player.
But yeah, do it in the 93rd minute when you're 1-0 up. Don't do it in the 33rd minute when you're going 1-0 down and you've got an hour to try and level the game up. It's just pure stupidity. It's desperation from Steve Cook is what it is.
Which is a bit worrying, isn't it, if you're Bournemouth players are that desperate.
And especially considering before the game against Norwich, who are another team in the bottom three, of course, so I think Bournemouth were feeling the pressure, Cook said, we need to give the town of Bournemouth something to be proud about. Well, there you go. There's something to be proud about. Superman dive and punch the ball around the post when you're a centre-back.
Build a statue of him diving, in my view. I think it was a great moment. I really enjoyed it. Possibly hero is a bit strong, but I still
really
enjoyed
it. I see where
you're
going with it like that. But for me, I mean, it'd be no surprise. I'm going to nominate someone who has you know, gets his first year of bad press for no reason whatsoever. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves from people. And I'm going to nominate Jordan Henderson. I just think that in the last 12 months, the guy has been absolutely superb. And I think since we lost that Champions League final to Madrid, his game has gone up another level for me. And I think he carries himself with great dignity. He's really good, kind of, you know, post-match, pre-match. And he's delivering on the pitch. I mean, anyone who thinks he's not in any form of the team of the season, for me, I just can't see it. And I think, you know, yesterday was the culmination of that for me. And I think big up Jordan Henderson.
One of those players that's not very fashionable to give
exactly
credit to.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at him and what he does on the pitch and the influence that he has on that, on, you know, that Liverpool team, and I just like salute his resilience and the fact that he just keeps kind of showing up, and, you know, he doesn't let these people get into his head, and, you know, he's got this really kind of like titanium like mentality, you know, to go and do it. And because there's a lot of pressure that comes with that armband at that club, and I think that he's going to find himself in really esteemed company.
A friend of mine said that he thought Jordan Henderson had a good World Cup in Russia. I thought he had a stinking tournament. I thought he was awful. Jordan Henderson against Croatia in the semi-final, he was shocking. But Steve's right. Ever since then, he's been brilliant. Ever since that summer, he's obviously sat down, taken stock. He obviously didn't like losing the semi-final in the World Cup, which obviously no one would. Didn't like losing the Champions League final, obviously no one would. And he's definitely gone on and progressed his game, and he's improved massively. So yeah, I would agree.
It speaks volumes, doesn't it, for, you know, the sports psychology side of any sport, really, whether you're an MMA fighter or a boxer or a footballer. When you decide to invest in your mindset and you know, get that as strong as your skills on the pitch, I think the results are there to see. And I think, you know, he's really, like Niles just said, you know, them things rankled with him, I think, and he thought of how do I get to the next level, and he's probably identified that as a potential weakness in his game, and he's just gone and worked on it with people that can help him get to that, and it's just the transformation in the last 12 months has been incredible.
And I'd be rewarded with a Premier League title at the end of the season.
Who knows,
Steve?
Mate?
Right, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back in a minute and do the really fun bit of heroes and villains, which is, of course, the villains. And we'll do that next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Premier League updates.
Welcome back. This is Football Social Daily. Right, we're going to get stuck into the villains part of heroes and villains. I'm going to go first on this one because my villain nomination from the weekend is Arsenal fans. All of them.
God.
Now, I know we've got a healthy portion of Arsenal fans that listen to the podcast, particularly stateside, so I'm risking alienating 50% of our audience here, pretty much.
And just before Jim goes off on one, thanks for listening. We've appreciated your support throughout the last 12 months of the podcast.
Look, if I'm wrong,
please don't
this,
leave us.
If I'm calling this wrong completely, then get me on the Twitter, at the Sports Social, and let me know. Have a right to reply. But from what I'm seeing at the moment at Arsenal, already into Mikel Arteta's reign as the new manager, the crowd are beginning to turn, which is absolute madness. The fact there is this toxicity already creeping into the Emirates Stadium and particularly Arsenal Twitter. And I know Twitter is no barometer of social.
Such a lovely place, though.
Oh, it's just a ridiculous place. But yeah, the fact that even at this stage, when, for me, I look at the Arsenal team on the pitch and the results aren't quite going the way that maybe a lot of Arsenal fans would have hoped when a new manager came in.
No, they're having a terrible season, let's be honest.
And they're drawing a lot of games. I mean,
signs are there, though.
Yeah, exactly, that's it. There has been a progression. There has been a rise in effort levels from everyone on the pitch. There does seem like the players, and it's a cliche, it seems like the players care a little bit more. Performances from key players like Pepe. Pepe looks like a different player since Arteta has come in. And I think the
green
shoots
there. See that burst of pace at the weekend?
Yeah.
Stunning.
It looks like the player they bought, or the player they wanted to spend whatever, 75 million quid on. But the green shoots are there, and if Arsenal fans keep on turning on managers 6 months into the job and oust them and get a new boy in, then there's never going to be any progression at that football club, and the old problems will keep on rearing their heads again and again. So if you are one of the people using Arteta out on Twitter or booing from the Emirates crowd or ranting on Arsenal TV, give your head a wobble, because he will come good, Arteta. I'm convinced the signs are there and he just needs more time.
My question to the Arsenal fans listening to the podcast, and obviously we appreciate him listening in and checking us out and subscribing and stuff like that. What is it you think you should be getting? You know what I mean? And where does it come from? You know, because you've got a young manager who's worked with Pep Guardiola for the last, what, 3 or 4 years? Mm-hmm. And he's very clearly trying to implement his footprint on a squad that has its problems, and there is discipline problems at Arsenal. It's very clear that that's the case. And slowly but surely, he is trying to recreate something, a monster of a football club. Not one of the biggest in Europe, but still a monster of a football club. What is it that's making you boo? You know, what is it that's making it? Is it that, you know, the fact that you think you should be challenging for the title? Well, let me tell you, Arsenal fans, you're nowhere near. You are light years away from it. So we can take that out of the equation. Is it the fact that you're not winning Champions Leagues? Because there's probably, what, 10, 12 better teams in Europe than you?
Got to one final in their history.
Exactly. So you're not entitled to win the Champions League, and you're not going to win the Premier League. Domestically, can you win the FA Cup or the Carabao Cup? Is that what's really kind of annoying you, the fact that you're not having your day out at Wembley? Is that what it comes down to? Because
that was never enough. Under Wenger, the FA Cup wasn't enough.
They won it two seasons in a row, didn't they?
You've got to be realistic about where you are. Mm. You know, and they've bought poorly, I think, Arsenal over the years. And they're not famous for anything on the pitch. You know, it's not like kind of free-flowing football. It's not being kind of defensively sound.
Not since the days of Vieira's.
Adams and Bold and so on and so forth. So you've got to start somewhere, I suppose, is what I'm saying. And I think, you know, I look at, when Jurgen Klopp came into Liverpool, I think we finished eighth in his first season.
You gave
him
a good 3 years, like I was saying earlier, in the first part of the podcast. It's taken 3 years to generate Liverpool into what they are now.
But you've got to go on the journey, though, Niall, haven't you?
Sure.
You know what I mean? You've got to kind of go, if that's the promised land, we've got through thick, thin, whatever, we've got to stick with it. What you can't do to a young manager who's gone in and who will turn the ship, I think, you can't start booing him after when he's five or six games into his tenure because you've drawn at home against Sheffield United. Because the reality is, Arsenal fans, that's where you are in the scheme of things. Mm.
And
you know what I mean?
I think the promising signs are there, not just from a managerial point of view, but I think from an ownership point of view as well. And the Cronkies get a bad rap. And when you compare them to the other villainous owners of the Premier League, like Ashley or the Glazers or the Davids, then they are the one ownership that seems to be listening, that seems to want to build something at that football club. And it hasn't always been that case, but certainly, again, there's green shoots there.
I think they realise the lower down the Premier League table they finish and out of the Champions League, the less money they get. It's as simple as that. I think it's as easy as that. And I'll try and have a stab at Steve's questions here. I think, obviously, football supporters now in the Premier League, we are increasingly impatient in a world, this is going to sound philosophical now, but in a world where everything's on demand, you can get your favourite TV show instantly. You can order a drink at a table in a pub and it's delivered to you immediately. You don't even have to go up to the bar anymore. Well, in a world where everything's instant, success also falls under that moniker. We want success to be instant. I think Arteta, being a former servant of the club and a good one at that, is going to get more grace amongst the supporters. I also think the second part of what I'm trying to say is the Emirates has always been a bit of a stronghold for Arsenal. Their home record across the however many, what is it now, 14 years they've been at the Emirates, has been generally pretty damn good.
Mm.
As a home side, very, very rarely do they get beaten. It's their away form this season and last season, which has been the real issue for Arsenal. I think Unai Emery was expected to come in and hit the ground running a lot better than he has done. I think Steve's right. I think there was definitely underlying attitude problems amongst the players. However, I saw an interview with David Luiz after Arteta's first game. And he was stood there and they just won the game. And he was stood there with his microphone in his hand and he was kind of looking at the floor and he was going, no, we know we've not done enough for Arsenal Football Club. We know we're building something strong. We need to turn it around. And that was kind of a penny dropping moment for me watching him speak like that, thinking, well, OK, you get this. You're part of the cause. And I think this is what Arteta needs to focus on, is the fact that as long as he's got the players on side, which he's very, very good at, by the way, apparently Manchester City have lost a massive asset in Arteta. The amount of coaching that he used to do
with the lads,
credited a lot for Sterling's success,
is remarkable. Apparently, Arteta was the one on the training ground pulling the strings day to day, and Pep was the man who kind of oversaw it all. So they have got a big, big talent in terms of coaching in Mikel Arteta. I just think Arsenal fans need to curb their expectations. As Steve says, go on the ride. It takes time. They will come back. They will come back strong. Football goes in cycles. It's very embryonic for sure. And I think that the squad does need a regeneration. I fear for them if Aubameyang doesn't stick around. I really do. I just wonder, where the goals are coming from there. But, there's optimism there. There's optimism. We've seen likes of Bukayo Saka come through as well. You know, young players. Martinelli's young with a lot of potential. Mm-hmm. Guendouzi's an excellent player, having a good season as well, yeah. Another young star. So they've got plenty of potential there.
Yeah.
And I think, like you say, with the way Arteta's worked with some of the players at Manchester City and kind of transformed them with a lot less credit than what Guardiola gets, I think Arsenal fans have a reason to be excited. Just, you're 11th in the table. You're not going to win anything this season. Just take it on the chin. Have a good summer. Get some good players in. And who knows what might happen next season.
Arsenal fans, chill the f*** out.
Do you know
words.
What also I'd add to it just to, before we've moved
now,
on?
We're not going to add anything, Steve, because we're running out of time. We need to give you some more. So I'm not going to let you add anything. You can save it for another time because we've got more villains to get through before we get onto the villain of Steve's email notifications, which seems to be chirping away in the background of this podcast.
Is it? I can't even hear it.
So I can hear someone's email notifications. Maybe it's mine. Niall, who are your villains?
Okay, so I've got three villains on the list, but one sort of bona fide villain. Steve's going to grimace at me for this. Jamie Carragher for the most cringy piece of commentary I've heard on Sky Sports in a long time. Mo Salah, you little dancer. You've already used that one, mate. You can't use it again. You just can't. Every time Salah scores a goal, you're going to go, Mo Salah, you little dancer. It's like embarrassing. Anyway, also Alisson wearing trackies. It was 4 degrees in Liverpool yesterday. Great ball for Salah's second goal. Stop wearing tracksuit bottoms. Sadio Mane was from Senegal. It's 36 degrees in Senegal in January. It's 4 degrees in Liverpool. He wasn't wearing trackies.
Can you wear trackies out
he wasn't
pitch?
Wearing gloves. You're from Brazil, Alisson. It's 22 degrees at the moment. It's not that cold. 4 degrees. You can deal with it, mate. Glorified Gabor Kirai, but good assist, and he's having a good season. So yeah. I'll temper that a little bit.
Go on.
The real villain for me is the Newcastle United corner flag. I don't know if you've seen this. But after Isaac Hayden secured the smash and grab for Newcastle in the 94th minute against Chelsea, Matt Ritchie ran over to the corner flag, booted it, and it went spinning into the crowd and smashed a poor unsuspecting gentleman straight in the testicles. So the villain is the Newcastle United St James's Park corner flag.
Fair enough, you can have that. Steve, you've got a villain to add to the mix?
Oh, I've got a couple of villains, Jim.
One of them's me for slagging off Alisson.
Yeah, I mean, obviously shots have been fired by Niall, so our relationship is going to suffer as a result of that.
We're just battling it out for the best home record in England this season,
exactly,
Portsmouth and Liverpool.
Exactly. So I've got a couple, just touching on... what I did, I watched it back last night when I got here, and you talked about the commentary. Martin Tyler, gee, I cannot stand the man. I think, you know, please get Peter Drury in because his commentary is insanely good. But anyway, my villain is David De Gea. For yesterday. Ooh. And David De Gea, let me kind of qualify this.
What was he wearing
first.
On the lower half of his body?
I mean, what's all that about? You know,
not trackies.
You probably find a spat, mate.
He's got Alisson has got photos of Gabor Kirai on his bedroom wall, I'm convinced.
So, for me, David De Gea, world-class goalkeeper on his day, you know, being played in his season, a few times at United, hasn't even across him and Luke Shaw. But for me, when Liverpool scored the second goal yesterday, which was absolutely bonkers that it was ruled out by VAR. He has, he's been up in the referee's face, pointing in the referee's face and getting in at the referee. And I think that was an attempt to disguise how weak he was in that situation. He's gone up for a ball with Van Dijk. He can use his arms. Van Dijk can't use his arms. And he's just being kind of outmuscled in it. And it was a bad look for him, I thought. And the way that he carried on with the referee, I mean, I thought he might have got something a bit more serious than a yellow card for that because he was really in his face, wagging his finger at him. And I just think it was just a weak display all round, really. And I think that he's better than that because he is a world-class keeper and he's probably in the conversation. You know, when you talk about the best keepers in the world, David De Gea is probably in there. And I think, come on, son. You know, we don't need to kind of stoop to that level.
I think it's one of the things I hate seeing in football is that whole surrounding the referees and trying to make them make a decision that maybe they wouldn't have made. Otherwise, I have questions about how effective it actually is, and it's something that could easily be got rid of out of the game with a red card here and there. I do think it was a foul on David De Gea. I think any game you see, any kind of challenge on a goalkeeper now, and it is a foul. I'm not saying it should be a foul, but I think by the laws of the game, it is a foul.
If I'm a Manchester United fan, it's a foul. If I'm a Liverpool fan, it's never a foul in a million years. it's one of those. I genuinely think that you will get a 50-50 split on this one. I really think
that when he's gone up and his arms haven't been in, you know, anywhere near.
I get that. But you can't do anything to goalkeepers anymore.
No.
Goalkeepers are extremely well protected, aren't they?
I suppose that is right. And I think it's the current state of the game, isn't it? You know, when you can't go up and challenge the goalkeeper, in an honest situation where the ball's up in the air, That's bad for the game. And I think, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you know, there's nothing we can do about it now. I suppose it kind of dispels the Liverpool myths.
De Gea was adamant, though, wasn't he, that it was a foul? Like, yeah. I mean, you can say maybe he was trying to disguise the fact that he felt that he had made a mistake or whatever, but I've not seen him that animated ever.
Whether it's a foul or not, he should have kept the ball. Because it wasn't enough contact for the ball to be knocked out of his hands. Hmm. It was just a body check.
It
sounds a bit, I don't know what the word is, a bit aggressive for me to say this, but could De Gea have not just led with his knee? Van Dijk in the back?
I mean... They bring the knee up to protect
him. If he comes up with his body, Van Dijk is just basically nudged him in midair. Mm. And like you say, it doesn't look like a foul. If De Gea leads with his knee like the old school goalkeepers used to be taught to do, then you've got a bit of protection there and there's a bit of a space between, I don't want to say Van Dijk, you should have tried to injure him. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying sometimes you do have to be a bit streetwise in that situation, and maybe De Gea could have handled it differently.
Agreed. Use your physicality and use your strength.
He was poor, and I think when he can use his arms as well in that situation as a goalkeeper, he's just not covered himself in glory in that respect, and his conduct, I thought, was terrible after it.
Mm. There's your heroes and your villains from the weekend. Let's crack on and do some quick transfer newsy, gossipy bits from the back page of the paper. Sky Sports reporting that Bruno Fernandes has told Sporting Lisbon he wants to join Manchester United. What's new? Is this deal going to happen? 80 million quid or whatever seems to be the
80?
Touted price. 80 million's the touted price, but that seems to be the sticking point between United don't want to pay 80, Sporting do want £80 million. Is it going to actually happen at any point?
I'll tell you what I know. I know that Bruno Fernandes was pretty much a done deal. United wanted €50 million to sign him. Sporting Lisbon said no, 60, otherwise we're not doing it. Okay. And then United said add-ons. The add-ons were said to be unrealistic, much like we saw last season with another transfer that didn't go through. Wan-Bissaka. Win the Champions League. If he gets the Ballon d'Or, if they win the Premier League, then you get your extra money. Sporting Lisbon went, hang on a sec, we don't think that's realistic. Sporting Lisbon have also been shafted, for want of a better expression, in transfers in the past where they've agreed to these add-ons, and I don't think they're willing to let that happen again. Also, Friday night was the Lisbon derby between Benfica and Sporting, and I think they wanted to make sure that Bruno Fernandes was available for that game. Obviously, that happened on Friday night. Now we're on to Monday. There's been games over the weekend, so I wouldn't read too much into the fact that it's not happening. The price tag has definitely soared, though, and I don't think Manchester United are willing to spend £80 million on him, so I think we'd definitely hit a snag there.
My little query with this whole thing is, if he is the striker that Manchester United fans think he is, that he's going to go in there and solve all these problems...
He's not a striker, though, is he?
Midfielder.
Oh, sorry.
Why aren't other big European clubs going in for him? Why isn't there not this massive amount of interest in signing him if he is a player of this quality?
We had Jack Gorn on from the Daily Mail on yesterday's podcast on the Premier League Review Show, and he was saying that Manchester United decided against signing him in the summer because he took too many risks in possession. Mm. And now he's sort of at the top of their list, so to speak. So something must have changed between the summer and now for Manchester United to go, actually, we'll go in for him again.
Maybe it's a level of desperation.
Maybe it is. Manchester United are always going to be squeezed for the big bucks because of what they've spent in the past and because of who they are as a football club. I think Chelsea are the exact same. I think no matter who they go in for this January, if they do, or even in the summer, because Chelsea have a reputation of spending £50 million on Torres and £50 million here and £50 million there, clubs go, all right, well, you're in the Premier League, you're rich, we'll squeeze you for as much cash as possible. Yeah. Whereas I think Liverpool haven't really flexed their muscles in that extent, except for maybe Alisson and Van Dijk. You can still get signings like Shaqiri and Minamino for £8 million. You know, Liverpool have got that sort of nailed down, really, dialed in.
That's Michael Edwards, who deserves a lot of credit for that.
As for Manchester United, they are always going to be squeezed for the big bucks, and whether the owners like it or not, that's just the way it's going to be. So I think if United want these players, they're going to have to pay big money. I think, like I said yesterday on the show, I think £45 million is the new £10 million of yesteryear. Mm. I think that's the way it goes. Seb Haller, £40 million from the Bundesliga. Not many goals. Joel Linton, Newcastle, again from the Bundesliga. 7 goals last season, £40 million. It's the £10 million, the £12 million of what we were seeing 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
£40 million is that new benchmark of your reasonably good player.
Let's talk about Arsenal. They're trying to sign a defender in the shape of Bayern Munich's Jerome Boateng, who could be coming back to the Premier League. The idea is he'll be signed on loan, and then the RB Leipzig centre-back, Deyot Upamecano?
Upamecano,
yeah. Is coming in. This is according to The Star, will be coming in the summer. Now, Upamecano seems like a more Mikel Arteta-esque signing than Jerome Boateng, but do we think Boateng can do a job for Arsenal, shore up that defence in the short term?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I genuinely don't. I'm not sure what he offers, and I think about Arteta, and we waxed lyrical about him before, it doesn't feel like an Arteta signing to me.
His career's gone off a bit of a cliff, Jerome Boateng.
You know, when he's not like first choice for the national team or anything, is he?
Well, the fact that Bayern are happy to send him out on loan says quite a lot in itself.
I just think Upamecano, Arsenal have been linked with him for the last 2 years, and he's got potential. He's young. Boateng brings experience. They've got the experience in David Luiz, but they knew what they were signing with David Luiz. I just wonder what their sort of priority is as a football club. Obviously, signing a centre-back is one of the key areas for them. They do have reasonable defence. I mean, Luiz and Sokratis has been all right recently. Rob Holding's probably one of their other better centre-halves as well. Mustafi's willing to be given a second chance by Arteta, if you believe what the manager says. Mm. Boateng, he brings experience. I just
doesn't improve
can't
them though, does it?
See, how he makes Arsenal any better than they are
backup
now.
It's defensive backup, I guess.
Yeah, I mean they've got
Chambers sort of, is out for the season,
which is a loss because I actually rate him. But they've got the goalkeeper. You know, they've just got to sort out that centre back position and get it nailed down, because a lot of the more successful teams have a very settled pairing. Mm.
We're not going to discuss this one, but Inter Milan want to sign everybody, it would seem. The Mail say they want Christian Eriksen, Victor Moses and Oliver Giroud on their radar, according to Sky Sports. Sport in Spain saying they want Luka Modric. Essentially, Inter Milan are trying to build a great team in 2015, which is nice to see. And Tottenham, they're looking to Leicester City to sort their striker crisis, a replacement for Harry Kane. I didn't even realise that Ismail Slimani was still at Leicester City.
He's on loan at Monaco, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on loan at Monaco, but they want to take him on loan, apparently. 7 goals in 13 games for Monaco. Not been playing that much in the last few weeks, but he's the kind of target man that Jose Mourinho does like, and Tottenham looked really toothless against Watford.
Yeah, I wonder what Jose will do about this, because I think Christoph Piatek was linked from AC Milan as well. He's not had a great season. He joined AC from Genoa for €35 million in the summer after having an unbelievable campaign. Or might have been last January, actually, he moved there. He was brilliant last season, and he's kind of not hit the heights this season. Slimani, if he can't get in Leicester's team, why is he going to do a job for Tottenham? Don't understand it. Tottenham are offered Llorente.
It's a cheap option, though, isn't it?
Tottenham are offered Llorente. Obviously, that's not the sort of player that Jose wants to sign, because they've refused signing him back again. I just don't see what Slimani. Again, it's another one I'm very underwhelmed by.
Yeah, is it just
classic Tottenham
he
trying to pinch the pennies?
At Leicester, didn't he?
Did he? He was their record signing and did nothing. Mm. So I just wonder what they see in him. I think he's in his 30s now as well? So, he's not exactly in the peak of his career, let's just say that. I mean, you'd expect him to have been banging them in by now. I don't know, but one thing Jose needs to do, they haven't scored in 3 games now, Tottenham. 3 games in a row they've not scored, so they need to sort that out.
I do remember when, because Aston Villa were linked with him a couple of, well, probably beginning of last week, Aston Villa in there being linked with most strikers that have played anything in the Premier League. But I think that he doesn't have a recall clause in his contract.
Right.
So Leicester can't recall him, so Monaco, in order for him to go anywhere, have to say, yeah, well, you can have him back. The fact that he's not played recently is a sign they might do that, but I don't see why they would when he is an option for him and he is scoring goals this season. That is it for Football Social Daily. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode, as we are every single day during the Premier League season. Make sure you click subscribe however you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next time. Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
See ya.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.